This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, February 11th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. On today's edition of Ozarks, 21C Museum Hotel officially opens in Bentonville. We'll have a report from the ribbon-cutting ceremony that took place late this morning. Plus, a local nonprofit organization is helping educate residents about the Earned Income Tax Credit, while tomorrow night's Science Cafe will provide information on the nanotechnology work being conducted on the University of Arkansas campus. Those stories and more, but first, lawmakers may soon have a new tool to root out fraud and corruption in state government. Today, a House committee advanced legislation that would pay a reward to any state employee who reports waste or inefficiency. That employee would stand to receive 10% of any savings the state gains from their report. Republican Representative Nate Bell of MENA says his bill is a safeguard.
It's as much preventative as it is curative. At this point, you know, obviously if there is fraud, we don't know about it. So the idea is that if it is occurring, that it brings it to the light of day, and that if it's not occurring, that it helps prevent it in the future.
Some lawmakers questioned whether the bill would cause the state to have to spend extra money for additional investigations into waste and fraud. The House is expected to vote on the bill next week. As lawmakers look for ways to fill a $60 million shortfall in the Medicaid budget and weigh the possibility of expanding the program, an audit released Friday shows the program has paid more than $1 million to ineligible recipients since 2009. House Republican Majority Leader Bruce Westerman says the audit's results show a broken system.
I think what concerns me is the fact that we keep having shortfalls in the Medicaid system, and then we see that we have structural problems inside the program. And there's a lot of talk about expanding Medicaid, wanting to add more beneficiaries, add more services, yet we've got a broken system that needs fixed. So it's what we've been saying all along, that before we start talking a lot about expansion, we need to fix what's broken.
The audit was scheduled for a March release, but Republican lawmakers requested a preliminary report that would have been released 2 weeks ago. Objections from the governor and the State Department of Human Services, which oversees Medicaid, pushed its release back. The governor's spokesman, Matt DeCampbell, says the report released last week is more in line with standard practices.
We're still reviewing them. I think he is gratified that the more traditional procedures were followed, the DHS had the chance to sit down with the Bureau, and that the result that you see, even though we won't agree with all of it, and I don't think any administration ever will, it was a productive discussion, and we've got a fair representation of the agency.
The audit shows DHS paid benefits to ineligible Medicaid recipients at a rate of 15% in 2009. DHS says it took corrective action. The next 2 years saw ineligible payment rates in the 3% range until last year, when they rose to 14%. DHS says the audit looked at different data for the last year. Officials say consumers will likely see higher beef prices because of a 6% drop in the number of beef cattle in Arkansas. The severe drought last year is the primary reason. Dr. Tom Troxell, a professor for animal sciences at the University of Arkansas Little Rock, says this is the third consecutive year for a decline.
Hopefully we can get back to a normal weather pattern, and cattle producers are optimistic folks, and if we can get back to a normal weather pattern, I think you'll see cattle producers will start to rebuild their cattle herd, and we'll see beef cattle supplies come back, and price of beef will start to decline.
The reduction in Arkansas was twice the national rate decline, which was 3%. According to a new study by the University of Arkansas, Razorback Athletics has an annual estimated economic impact of $153.6 million on the state's economy. The study also contends that Razorback Athletics will have an additional $239.7 million impact through planned construction projects already on the books. The study was conducted during the 2011 and 2012 academic year by the Center for Business and Economic Research in the Walton College of Business at the U of A. The study also found that more than 1 million fans attended Razorback sporting events on the UA campus in Fayetteville. This resulted in new economic activity of nearly $30 million in Northwest Arkansas, including hotel or motel room stays, and the purchase of more than 1 million meals in local eateries. The study projects that in the next 5 years of athletic facility construction, activity worth $150 million in 2012 will lead to 2,016 jobs and long-term economic value of $239.7 million. Mostly cloudy tonight with lows in the 30s in northwest Arkansas and the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, there's an 80% chance of rain with a high of 44 degrees. Tomorrow night, there is a 70% chance of precipitation with snow likely, and expect lows from 30 degrees in northwest Arkansas to 34 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now inside Studio 123 is our news director, Kyle Collins. Welcome.
Thank you, Antoinette. As you may have heard or read, a student who worked at KUAF accidentally shot his hand Friday afternoon inside our building. The student was the only person injured in the incident, though others in the building at the time were quite shaken. Coincidentally, at the very time of that shooting, a reporter for Ozarks at Large, Timothy Dennis, was putting the finishing touches on a story about legislation that, if passed, would allow guns on college campuses in Arkansas. I do want to tell you that all of the interviews conducted for the story had been finished before the incident took place at KUAF.
A proposed bill by a local state lawmaker would allow certain people to carry concealed firearms on the state's college campuses. That bill heads to the House Committee on Education in the Arkansas Legislature. But as Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis reports, proponents and opponents of the issue have plenty to say about the bill.
House Bill 1243 would allow staff and faculty of Arkansas's public colleges and universities to carry with them onto campus concealed firearms, provided they have been granted a concealed carry permit by the Arkansas State Police. District 84 Representative Charlie Collins, a Republican from Fayetteville, introduced the bill again during this legislative session. A similar bill he filed during the 2011 General Assembly was defeated in the House Education Committee. He says that now is the time for Arkansas to pass legislation that he believes will help enhance the safety on college campuses in the state.
There are places that our concealed carry law exempts in Arkansas, which I believe some of these crazies and killers use in their thinkings. In other words, we create gun-free zones. And these killers know that. They know that it's less likely they'll be stopped there. They understand it's very difficult for law enforcement to arrive before they wreak their havoc on innocent people, and they believe that they can accomplish their horrible objectives.
Collins says that although university staff would be the only ones armed through his bill, the proposed legislation would still make campuses safer by deterring others from illegally carrying firearms onto campus.
Because a crazy killer is fearful that even one person might stand up and defend innocent lives. The crazy killer is deterred, in my view, certainly some of them, by the notion that somebody could stop him or her, not that, you know, students are particularly armed. So I think we've got a great piece of legislation that can help move us forward in Arkansas. We've had three of these incidents in the last 12 years on Arkansas campuses that resulted in deaths.
Indeed, Arkansas has seen some shooting deaths on college campuses. Four men were convicted for opening fire in 2008 on students at the University of Central Arkansas in Conway, and proponents of concealed carry at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville frequently cite the 2000 case of UA English professor John Locke, in which a former graduate student shot and killed Locke in his Kimball Hall office before turning the gun on himself. But not everybody thinks that allowing guns onto campuses is such a good idea. Sydney Burris is a professor of English and director of the Fulbright College Honors Program at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. After hearing about the proposed legislation, he started an online petition opposing HB 1243 or any other bills that would allow for the carry of concealed firearms on campuses.
When I first heard about the legislation, I was talking to some of my friends on campus about it, and I really didn't know what their opinions, you know, about the legislation would be. But as I started talking to people, I realized that practically everyone I spoke to, which is not, of course, you know, a scientific poll, but it was just everyone I spoke to was against it. So, you know, I decided that I would start a petition. And so I started the petition, and I basically sort of, you know, publicized it on my personal, you know, Facebook page. And, you know, it took off from there.
As of Sunday evening, his petition on signon.org has garnered more than 1,600 signatures. While Collins believes that his bill would eliminate, quote, gun-free zones that give opportunity for acts of violence to be committed, Burris says that the bill would eliminate something else entirely if enacted.
My stance against the concealed carry, you know, legislation on college campuses has more to do with the fact that I believe college campuses are unique environments in American culture. And I believe the product that we generate, that is the sort of, you know, active creation of ideas, you know, requires a special environment. And I think the introduction of guns to that environment is going to compromise our product.
While the proposed college carry bill would bar students from packing heat while on campus, students at the U of A in Fayetteville voiced their opinion on both sides of the issue. Clint Shoemake, a political science and anthropology student at the university, agrees that something would be lost if guns were allowed on campus.
I think that if your instructor does have a weapon, I think that does take away from the learning environment. And I do know that our police force here on campus has been trained in, you know, shooting exercises. So I'd like to think that if we prioritize our own security, we have a force that will prevent shootings on campus.
But not everyone is as confident in the abilities of the university police. Carson Trevelyan is a UA junior studying communications disorders. He says that he would feel safer if those licensed to carry concealed handguns were allowed to carry their weapons onto campus.
If somebody wants to cause harm, wants to kill people, they're not going to obey the no firearm signs. They're going to bring the guns on campus whether they're allowed or not. So I think that allowing concealed permit holders to carry on campus would do nothing but add to the protection, because U of A police can't be everywhere at once. I think if there was a shooting to happen on the middle of campus, it would take the police at least a few minutes to get there, and there's a lot of damage that can be done in 3 minutes.
Architecture sophomore Shaylin Benson agrees with Trevelyan in supporting concealed carry on campus. She says that she thinks that having more guns present would be more successful at deterring would-be shooters than having a ban on all firearms posted at all edges of campus.
It is called a concealed handgun for a reason, because it has to stay concealed. And the purpose of the ban isn't to say, I'm here, I'm going to protect you. It's to have it concealed on you, and if anything were to happen, you're there to protect the people around you. So I don't think it would affect this safe haven for learning. If anything, it would enhance it, because people would know they are safer, even if they don't know who is carrying around them, which is the point.
But junior political science and economics student Autumn Lewis thinks that more guns on campus could make active shooter situations more dangerous for some and more chaotic for those tasked with responding to such incidents.
Students would know that these professors have concealed carry guns, so if they walked into a classroom, the first thing that they would do is go after the professor. I think that that's unnecessary. And again, I've talked with the chief of police for the University of Arkansas, and he thinks that if his officers were to respond to a situation, they'd have to spend precious time deciding which person with the gun was the good guy and which person with the gun was the bad guy. Whereas now, if they respond to a situation, anyone who has a gun on university property is obviously breaking the law. So it makes the situations much more clear.
Yet nobody interviewed for this story mentioned the effect of accidental deaths incurred by firearms. Of the nearly 309 million people living in the U.S., 606 people from all races, sexes, and ages died from accidental gunshot wounds in 2010, the latest year for which data was available from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That's just more than 50 accidental deaths across the country per month. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
There is another change to the Bentonville landscape. This morning at 10, the 21C Museum Hotel officially opened. The 104-room hotel is the third property to open for the Louisville-based company. Unique in presentation, art plays a major role for the boutique hotel. There is museum space open 24 hours a day to the public. The physical structure occupies a former parking lot just off the downtown square. Steve Wilson, the CEO of 21C, says this is the first project for the company to incorporate a new built-from-scratch hotel.
A big part of our company philosophy is preserving the environment, reusing old buildings, creating activity in the town square, in the city center. And I don't think many people have had the opportunity to actually build something new so close to the courthouse of a town square. I really think it's a great opportunity for us to be able to start from scratch, imagine what great spaces that Deborah could imagine, and still be part of a renovation, a revitalization of a downtown economy.
Bentonville Mayor Bob McCaslin has been the city's chief executive since the company first announced it would build its third property in the city. This morning, he sounded positively giddy moments before the ribbon cutting.
The 21C Museum Hotel experience has been described as follows. The most sophisticated art hotel concept in the world. Hip, romantic, sexy. Truly fantastic, intriguing, beautiful, and inspiring.
That brought this response from Steve Wilson, CEO of 21C.
I would venture to say that's the first time you all have ever heard your mayor use the word sexy from the podium.
Following the ribbon cutting this morning, Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas talked with Steve Wilson about the now open 21C Museum Hotel in Bentonville.
How does Bentonville fit into the vision for 21C?
Well, it's an interesting story, actually. When my wife and I first started thinking about sharing our art collection with the public, even in our own hometown, we had just toured the Bilbao, the Guggenheim Museum in Bilbao, Spain. And I was very inspired by that experience, by the fact that that museum had completely given a whole new identity to the community, to the region in Spain. And I had dreams of something like that in Kentucky. In the end, we did what we could do with our own small collection and were able to renovate five historic buildings into the first 21C. But soon after that, I began to read about Crystal Bridges, and I truly believe the Crystal Bridges is the equivalent to the Guggenheim Bilbao. It's going to completely change the landscape of tourism in this state and neighboring states. So we're thrilled to be able to contribute to that activity in this state. Obviously, tourism is increasing and going to continue to increase. So we thought Bentonville was a good place for a new hotel.
So you announced that you were going to build here before Crystal Bridges even opened. You just kind of knew?
I did. Actually, I have to say, I had toured the site. I'd looked at the drawings. I knew the reputation of the architect and the collection of unique collection of American art. I had total faith that it was going to make be the right place.
Well, so you mentioned American art. How will the collection here work with the collection at Crystal Bridges?
Well, I think it's interesting. Our collection is different for two reasons. We show only living artists, which is where we decided to name our company 21C, representing art of the 21st century. And we are we have an international collection. Arkansas artists, Kentucky artists, but also right now we're showing work from Turkey, from China, New York. And I think it's a really interesting, if someone is coming to this community as a tourist, you're going to see the American experience as well as the international experience. You're going to see the historic experience as well as the contemporary. I think it's really a beautiful marriage of the two kinds of art exhibitions.
Christina also talked to the architect of the new hotel, Deborah Burke.
Bentonville's town square is a classic American town square, and it's really pretty perfect. You know, it has the courthouse on one side, it has the 2 and 3 story retail defining its edges, but it's open enough to have big trees, and it's a classic. It's beautiful. And in identifying this property, when the 21C people identified this property, I thought, how perfect, because it's visible from the square, but it's actually not on the square. It's going to take the role of drawing people just to that next layer of blocks just beyond the square, so that activity begins to grow out from the square, almost like rings after you throw a pebble into a pond, so that the activity grows and grows, so it begins to encompass all of Bentonville. So how does that relate to New York City? Well, it's true whether it's New York or Bentonville or any city that has a center or recognizable centers, is that you want to activate the center and then you let that activity carry further activity and exchange and vitality beyond it. So that's what we're doing with this building.
You also mentioned the biking and the walking, and you mentioned, you know, spending time on the square. How much time did you actually spend in Bentonville, and did you walk these trails and did you bike these bike trails that you talk about?
I have spent a lot of time in Bentonville, a lot. I know those really early morning flights out of New York. I was here in hot weather. I was here in cold weather. The one thing I haven't done is had a bicycle on the bike trails, because I didn't know how to get my hands on a bicycle. Now that the hotel is open, I'm planning on coming back with my daughter and husband and using the hotel bikes, and we're going to bike the whole trail. But I have walked all the trails down towards Crystal Bridges because I thought it was really important. And I'm a walker. I'm a real walker. I like walking places. It's how you get to know places. But that connection, one of the beautiful things to me about Bentonville is how quickly one can go from a downtown feeling to being out in nature. And the fact that you walk past the hotel coming or going on your way to Compton Gardens, on your way to the art trail or the bike trail or the other trails that thread through the park on the way to Crystal Bridges, it's fantastic, that immediacy. So I'm going to actually come back with my family this spring, and we're going to do that as a trip. We're excited.
This used to be a parking lot. Would you say that this was sort of a repurposing of sorts in its own right?
Well, yes, I think. I don't think I'd get any argument in saying that downtowns get better when you put buildings on parking lots. And, you know, we built a garage behind this, which actually we didn't lose any parking density. In fact, I think we probably created some parking density, but we gave definition to a street, which is what architects want to do to make downtowns better.
Ozarks at Largest Christina Thomas talked with Deborah Burke, the architect for the new 21C Museum Hotel in Bentonville this morning after the official ribbon cutting just off the Bentonville Square.
I'm Roby Brock with your Talk Business Update, a recap of the biggest business and political headlines of the last week. About 30 Arkansas lawmakers announced the formation of the Legislative Steel Caucus, a coalition of government and business leaders hoping to duplicate what the natural gas industry did during the Fayetteville Shale's early years. The group was announced a week after state officials revealed the $1.1 billion Big River Steel Mill project near Osceola in Mississippi County. That John Corrente-led project is expected to initially employ 525 workers with average salaries in the $75,000 range. Senator David Burnett and Representative Monty Hodges, both of Mississippi County, were announced as co-chairs of the group, which included lawmakers from Fort Smith, McGee, Hope, and Little Rock. Arkansas economic and finance leaders fielded more than 5.5 hours of questions from the Arkansas House and State Senate on the state's recruiting of that $1.1 billion steel mill super project. Legislators must agree to a $125 million bond issue or an alternative financing of the deal to move the project forward. The state's Amendment 82 allows for the Arkansas legislature to use general obligation bonds for major economic development projects. PAM Transportation Services reported a net loss of $311,000 in its fourth quarter, but the Taneytown-based trucking firm still finished the year in the black. PAM Transportation closed 2012 with a $2.1 million profit compared to a $2.8 million loss in the previous year. Arvest Bank said its mortgage lending and servicing activities for 2012 were part of a record-breaking performance. The bank originated more than 17,000 mortgage loans, totaling $2.56 billion in 2012. That's compared to just $1.58 billion in 2011. For those of you doing the math, that's a 62% increase. Tyson Foods received an A from the Global Reporting Initiative for its latest Corporate Social Responsibility Report. The new sustainability report is the fourth Tyson Foods has produced since 2005, but it's the first to receive the Global Reporting Initiative's application level of A. The designation represents a high degree of disclosure and transparency in sustainability reporting. Joining several other states and the federal government, Attorney General Dustin McDaniel filed a lawsuit against Standard & Poor's, alleging that the credit rating agency intentionally misled investors in the way it rated the toxic assets at the center of the nation's 2008-2009 financial crisis. And finally, Doyle Rogers, chairman of the board of Metropolitan National Bank and a highly successful real estate developer and businessman, died this past week at the age of 94. A Newport native and Batesville resident, Rogers has been the longtime leader of Little Rock-based Metropolitan National Bank, and he was chairman of the board for the Doyle Rogers Company, a commercial real estate firm. Rogers was renowned for several important skyline contributions to downtown Little Rock. He was the developer for what is now known as the Peabody Hotel and the Stevens Building. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Update.
Support for Talk Business on Ozarks at Large comes from the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, they serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity, coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. It's Monday, February 11th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
How are you?
I'm doing well. You?
I feel like I've been gone forever.
It feels like forever.
It was a very long sick.
It was a very long sick, but we're happy that you're better now.
I'm happy that I'm better now, too. I think I may be back to, 90%.
Oh, good.
That's not bad.
Not bad.
And if you're at 90%, then take 90% of you and go to auditions tonight for Goodbye Charlie.
Okay.
It's the next show at Rogers Little Theater, If They Survive 9 to 5, the musical. Charles Reed Moeller is the director, and auditions are at 7 o'clock tonight.
Is this a comedy?
Mm-hmm, right. I think so.
Okay.
And the band Spoken.
I haven't seen them in forever.
Formed in Lowell in the 90s, and they are about to release their 7th studio album, Illusion. They will be performing at 9 o'clock tonight at George's, and tickets are all of $7. Yeah. There's a great cheap Valentine's
Day. Absolutely. I saw them at the music hall when that was still open.
When they say hard rock, are we talking metal or?
No.
No, just hard rock.
Just hard, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I need to get out to George's. Maybe tonight's the night.
There you go. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs. Arkansas, your Jimmy McCracklin was born James David Walker on August 13, 1921, in Helena in Phillips County. He took the name McCracklin from his stepfather, Barry, who adopted him. A pianist, organist, and vocalist, and also an accomplished boxer, Jimmy McCracklin made his name as a songwriter as well as a performer over a period of more than a half century.
What kind of life would we have? Just in case we both are wrong.
McCracklin family moved to St. Louis, Missouri, where Jimmy took lessons from blues pianist Walter Davis. Jimmy McCracklin joined the U.S. Navy and later settled in coastal Richmond, California. There, at his sister-in-law's club, Savoy, McCracklin was part of the club's house band, backing national performers such as Charles Brown.
Well, I know you heard of Susan Q. And I know you heard of the chicken, too. I know you heard of the cha-cha-choo. But the walk is a dance that you can do. You just walk. You just walk. Oh, you walk. Yes, you walk. Yeah, you walk. And that's the walk.
Jimmy McCracklin formed his own band, the Blues Blasters, in 1946 and kept the band name for decades. The year before, he cut his first single, and McCracklin would record for several local and regional labels in Los Angeles and Oakland, California for more than a decade. Over his long career, McCracklin recorded for an array of labels across the United States, from Mercury, Chess, Stax, and Imperial, down to lesser known such as Irma and Minute Records.
Well, I know you heard of the old Mambo, and I know you heard of the old Congo. But when you do the walk, you stay step on your partner's toe, you just walk. Yeah, you walk. Yes, you walk. Ah, you walk. That's the walk.
In 1957 and 1958, Jimmy McCracklin's first national breakthrough came with his R&B and pop hit, The Walk, complete with an appearance on TV's American Bandstand. Soon, the Phillips County native came to embody the so-called West Coast blues style with its faster tempos and emphasis on keyboards, not unlike that simply of straight R&B. In 1962, Jimmy McCracklin released his first solo album.
Tramp.
What you call me?
Tramp.
Well, you didn't.
You don't wear continental clothes or Stetson hats.
In 1967, Jimmy McCracklin's song Tramp, written for and with bluesman Lowell Fulson, became a hit duet for Otis Redding and Carla Thomas on Memphis, Tennessee's Stax label. McCracklin never recorded a version of his unique and most popular and lucrative songwriting credit. Tramp has been recorded by such names as Buddy Guy, ZZ Top, and Steve Miller, and sampled by Salt-N-Pepa, Slick Rick, EPMD, Prince, and De La Soul.
You know what, Otis? I don't care what you say. You're still a tramp.
What?
That's right. You haven't even got a fat bankroll in your pocket. You probably haven't even got 25 cents.
I got 6 Cadillacs, 5 Lincoln, 4 Ford, 6 Mercury, 3 T-Birds, Mustang. Ooh, I'm a lover.
You proved it by me.
My mama was. I pop it too.
What?
Other Jimmy McCracklin songs, from The Walk, to The Drag, to The Wobble, to The Georgia Slop, Think, Just Got to Know, My Answer, Lie to Me, and Beyond, also caught on with other blues, rock, and R&B acts. Even as he came to be known and embraced, especially in Oakland, California, as a practitioner of the West Coast blues, the songs and music of Helena's Jimmy McCracklin continue to resonate far beyond the West Coast of the United States. Arkansas-er Jimmy McCracklin of Helena in Phillips County in East Arkansas died December 20, 2012, in San Pablo, California. Jimmy McCracklin was 91. Here in its entirety is Arkansas-er Jimmy McCracklin of Helena in Phillips County with his song, Think.
Now that I give up my friends I know, and in return you give up yours.
Before we think,
what would we do later on?
Just in case we both are wrong,
I could give up my woman, you could give up your man, but it don't make sense to take the chance.
Before we think,
what would we do later on? What kind of life would we have?
Just in case we both were wrong.
That's true, but why gamble on me, and why should I on you?
Before we think,
what would we do later on? What kind of life would we have?
Just in case we both were wrong.
Arkansas-er Jimmy McCracklin of Helena in Phillips County with Think. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. Associate producer is Keith Merckx. For more information, visit arkansongs.org. Arkansongs, since 1999.
It is officially tax season, and some organizations are providing ways for local residents to keep as much money in their wallets as possible. United Way of Northwest Arkansas and the Northwest Arkansas Financial Sustainability Coalition have partnered together to organize free tax preparation services and provide tax credit information. Holly Hill, Vice President of Community Impact for United Way, says the organization is able to provide these services because of a $17,500 grant.
This would be our fourth year that we've received a grant from the Walmart Foundation, and so it allows us to support some local efforts and to partner with several community organizations, Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families, CCOA, Office of Human Concern, Northwest Arkansas Tax Site, and even the IRS. So it is a partnership.
The Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program is one way local taxpayers can save some cash this year. Holly says free tax preparation services are available to those making less than $50,000 annually. Tax preparation sites participating in the program include the Northwest Arkansas Tax Center at the Jones Center in Springdale, as well as the Sam M. Walton College of Business Department of Accounting on the University of Arkansas campus in Fayetteville. More information, including the location of other tax preparation sites, is available by calling United Way's 211 hotline. If taxpayers would prefer to prepare taxes on their own, Holly says they may do so online for free.
We have a link on our United Way website for myfreetaxes.com, and that is for individuals and families that have made less than $57,000 a year. And so they're actually able to log on and just file their own taxes if that's what they would like to do for free as well. So two free tax preparation services would be through the tax sites in Northwest Arkansas or through myfreetaxes.com.
Some low-income residents eligible for these free services may also be eligible for the Earned Income Tax Credit, which is a tax credit that helps you keep more of what you earned. According to the IRS's website, the Earned Income Tax Credit is a refundable federal income tax credit for low to moderate income working individuals and families. Congress originally approved the tax credit legislation in 1975 in part to offset the burden of Social Security taxes and to provide an incentive to work. When the Earned Income Tax Credit exceeds the amount of taxes owed, it results in a tax refund to those who claim and qualify for the credit. While this tax credit could benefit several people, Holly says there are more than 122,000 Arkansans who qualify for the credit but do not apply for it.
We know that there is approximately $200 million in the state of Arkansas that goes unclaimed through the Earned Income Tax Credit. So Earned Income Tax Credit is really the largest boost a hardworking family or individual financially will have within a year. You can receive anywhere between several hundred dollars to several thousand dollars through Earned Income Tax Credit based on your eligibility. The lower your income and the more children you have, the larger the return. But it's available for all sectors, different sectors of people, and often those people don't understand that they are eligible for Earned Income Tax Credit.
Some of the eligibility requirements for the Earned Income Tax Credit include having a Social Security number, an investment income of $3,200 or less for the year, and an adult with no qualifying children must have an earned income and adjusted gross income that's less than $13,980. The required earned income and adjusted gross income varies depending on your status, and it can go as high as $50,270 for a married couple filing jointly who has three or more qualifying children. Holly says some people who may not realize they qualify are those who don't think to file their federal taxes because they don't think they've earned enough income within a year. She says the idea behind the Earned Income Tax Credit is to give hardworking families a financial boost.
You know, it really aligns with our work around supporting hardworking families. We know that a quarter of our population in Northwest Arkansas are working families that are making approximately $25,000 a year. And so every penny counts and matters for those families. And it is our work to help support those families in any way that we can. So if you're not paying for your taxes to be filed, which can save you $200 to $300, and if you're actually receiving the earned income tax credit, then we really feel like we've supported that.
United Way will be helping facilitate these free tax services through April 15th. More information is available at unitedwaynwa.org/VITA. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Bringing scientists and non-scientists together is the goal of the organizers of the Science Cafe series, sponsored by the University of Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums recently talked to the two researchers taking part in tomorrow night's edition of the Science Cafe, and he has this report.
Tomorrow night, the latest edition of the Science Cafe will take place again at Powerhouse Restaurant in Fayetteville. The idea behind the Science Cafe is to bring scientists and researchers from the University of Arkansas faculty to an informal question and answer session with the public. Past events have centered on the aging process, nutrition, and the weather. Tomorrow night, a look into the future. The session is titled Macro, Micro, Nano, What's the Big Deal? And deals with nanotechnology. One of the presenters will be Greg Salamo, Distinguished Professor of Physics. He says when talking about nanotechnology and its possible applications, it's important to start with some perspective.
If you look back in history scientifically, you will find that the technology we build has always been based on different materials. And as materials, plastic is probably the easiest to point to, or the most recent to point to. A new material changes everything. And this is what nanotechnology brings to the table today, because if you take any element in the periodic table, like gold, and you change its size, its behavior, its mechanical, its strength, its color, its ability to conduct electricity or heat, its ability to go into the body without hurting it or hurting it, all of these things change, all because of size. And that's magical size is what is called the nano size.
Professor Salamo says the nano size is not a single atom, something that's made up of perhaps a million atoms. He says it's about 1/1,000,000th of a meter. Small.
This is what's changed everything, is that, number one, these materials have different properties. And so it's like any material in the periodic table is suddenly a new material. It's suddenly like discovering plastic and things like plastic, like discovering bronze and gold all over again. And so the impact, potential impact on machinery, on healthcare, on energy, on the environment, is all ready to explode.
Professor Salamo's calm passion about nanotechnology is equal parts excitement and patience. He says we're on the verge of a technological revolution, much like the breakthrough the transistor created. Over time, it has gone through a shrinking metamorphosis, changing technology in several fields along the way. Tomorrow night at the Science Cafe, Professor Salamo will be joined by Rob Sleaser, a postdoctoral fellow in the University of Arkansas's Department of Physics. Rob says working in a science with so many possibilities is a scientific dream come true. But he allows patience and perseverance are required.
You can get results very, very quickly, but they're not the results you wanted. They're not the results you had hoped for. And so it's not so much patience in that you're sitting waiting for things, or it's that understanding them and really figuring them out takes that persistence. That number of experiments may be much higher than you initially anticipated. I know coming into my PhD, I was hoping to do, you know, I don't know, three experiments and be done, right?
No.
It took a few more than that. Many more than that.
There have been thousands of news reports and articles about the possible changes working with materials at such a small level might bring. It's natural behavior for those of us not in science to want to read about specific breakthroughs and immediate results. Professor Greg Salamo says that's not the way it works, but he says what we can read about now is progress.
It's not stationary. There are two things that I think it's easy to promise. One is the impact is going to happen. There's no stopping it. It's just, you could see it. There's nothing but time needed to develop nanotechnology into many useful products. Right now, it's, you know, people often say it's the low fruit on the tree that people are picking, and that's exactly what's happening. The bigger issues take longer time to grow, and they're you know, in 10 years, 20 years, that kind of time frame, not longer than that. I guarantee you, not longer than that. The impact will be huge.
Take the laser, he says. He began his career building and operating lasers. At that time, many people wondered what good the laser would be. He says the earliest lasers were bulky energy hogs that didn't have many, if any, practical applications. The eventual impact, of course, is enormous. Much of our communication technology now uses optical fiber lasers. Very small lasers are used in surgery. Even grocery stores use lasers to scan the UPC codes at the checkout counter. Advances take time, but they happen. Research that may lead to the next big advances in nanotechnology is happening inside the relatively new Nanoscale Material Science and Engineering building on the U of A campus. Rob Sleaser says what's going on inside the building every day is nothing short of incredible.
You know, if you just walk into the atrium, it's a great space for people to run into each other. It's designed as a space for scientists from different areas, so biologists and physicists and engineers, to come together in a location and bump into each other. And so a lot of times you'll see people using the whiteboards that are available in that space to sketch up ideas to talk about science that's falls between these really well-defined areas of biology and physics, between physics and electrical engineering. If you go back into the lab spaces, we've got a lot of labs for growing crystals, for example, and then for measuring the properties of those materials. So we grow the new materials Dr. Salamo was talking about, and then we have other labs to measure their properties electrically or optically. We have the ability – we have one of the best microscopes you can buy still, the Titan, is a phenomenal tool and allows us to see what these look like on an atomic scale. We've got other microscopes that allow us to look at the surface of these and really see the atomic steps on these new materials that we're creating to see things at the nanoscale, and that's really, really cool to see those. And sometimes I don't even realize when I'm doing it anymore, and then I step back and think, you know, my gosh, I can't believe I'm seeing atoms here.
Tomorrow night's Science Cafe, devoted to nanotechnology, is open to the public. And Greg Salamo says bring your questions, including specific ones about whether the science will be able to lead to specific uses. Those questions, he says, are taken as a compliment.
I hope so. I hope it develops that way. I'm often, my experience, my best experience is in sixth, seventh grade. So we do have a program at the university that we operate that allows us to take inquiry science into the sixth, seventh grade schools of Northwest Arkansas. And just to get to the point, we'll go into that classroom and we'll, you know, do some things and then ask if there are any questions. And if there's 20 kids in that classroom, probably 30, more like 30 kids in that classroom, there'll be 30 hands up. And then you'll answer them one by one, boom, 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 boom. And when you're ready to leave, you'll see that there are 30 hands up. It's a remarkable thing that is that people want to know. Sometimes in college they seem embarrassed to ask the question. I hope that the cafe is sort of like that sixth, seventh grade. That would be a treat for us. Not only do we like the challenge of answering questions, because that's what we do for a living. We really detectives. That's what science is. It's a detective.
The Science Cafe is tomorrow night from 6:30 until 8 at the Powerhouse Restaurant in Fayetteville. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Kyle Kellums.
Coming up in the week ahead, as the sequester looms, former Pentagon official Michelle Flournoy joins us to break down the defense budget. And Wednesday, our favorite presidential speechwriters Paul Glastras and Peter Robinson join political junkie Ken Rudin to review the State of the Union address. I'm Neil Conan. All that and more in the week ahead on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation coming up next here on KUAF 91.3 FM. The Alma Performing Arts Center presents Neil Simon's Biloxi Blues on Monday, February 25th at 7:30 p.m. This nationally touring production shows the humor and humanity of a young group of recruits headed to war. Tickets and more information are available at almapac.org or 632-2129. A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Waldron. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. I will be back along with my co-host, Kyle Kellums. And to end today's show, last night, the Grammy Awards were on television, and the Song of the Year award was given to the band Fun for their song We Are Young. And so we will play that song to end today's show. Hope your week is off to a great start.
Give me a second, I need to get my story straight. My friends are in the bathroom getting higher than the Empire State. My lover, she is waiting for me just across the bar. My seat's been taken by some sunglasses asking about a scar. And I know I gave it to you months ago. I know you're trying to forget, but between the drinks and subtle things, the holes in my apologies, you know, I'm trying hard to take it back. So if by the time the bar closes and you feel like falling down, I'll carry you home.